everybody. Jimmy Smith. Today on the MMA on Sirius XM podcast, RJ Clifford and Dean Thomas catch up with UFC bantamweight Chris Gutierrez to talk about his win at UFC 281, retiring Frankie Edgar on MMA Today. Plus, I speak to Bellator color analyst John McCarthy to preview Bellator 288 on Friday night.
Chris Gutierrez got a first-round knockout over a legend in Frankie Edgar in his backyard at Madison Square Garden, so we had to talk to him. Chris Gutierrez joins us now. How you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Still feels surreal to me.
I was going to say, I'd feel my answer to that question would be fucking amazing. Thank you. Did you not see what I did on Saturday night? I mean, what's a week like after knocking out a future Hall of Famer in the world's most famous arena just, you know, minutes away from where you live?
Busy doing a lot of interviews, stuff like that. But, you know, that's part of it. Mm-hmm.
So now you're no stranger to winning, right? Like you're 7-0-1 in your last 8 in the UFC. But does this one feel different? Does this feel like your career has catapulted to someplace it hasn't been before?
I mean, it's kind of cool to see me up on the rankings. It says I'm number 13. So, that's about the only thing that's changed. It feels the same, you know, doing the interviews, going through all that process of it. But the only thing different this time is I get a number by my name Monday morning.
Man, I tell you what, man, when that fight started and you started connecting on Frankie, it really did look bad. Like, did you at any point, were you expecting it to be that easy? And at any point were you like, man, this is just like a lot easier than I thought?
No. I mean, no, you can even ask my coach. Before he walked out, I said, you know what? For some reason, I feel like I'm going to be on my ass in this fight a couple. Huh. I don't know. I envisioned a hard, grueling fight. I don't know why. It just, you know, it's Frankie Edgar. You know, let's be honest. This guy is, you know, climbed to the top of the mountain, you know, and he's continued to stay there. So, you know, again, I have a lot of respect for the guy. So to see his work and then to be in front of him, I was like, man, at some point I'm going to get taken down and he's going to try to rough me up. And though I was ready for anything, it's just, yeah.
Now we talked before the fight at the fighter meeting, and you said you was going to be well represented. Were you as represented out there with your people from Jersey and New York as you thought you would be?
I mean, I definitely had some people in the crowd going for me, but you know, the majority, no, I was behind enemy lines. That's what it felt like.
Oh, you were definitely behind enemy lines. I ain't gonna lie to you, Chris. When his music came on, there's just something about when Frankie Edgar's music comes on, the Biggie comes on, then he runs out. This very kind of it's pretty iconic, and you know, it's a special moment. But listen. You went out there and you did your thing, man, and you really proved that you are on a completely different level and that you should be fighting the next level of competition for sure.
I appreciate that. You know, at this point, yeah, right. That's what I believe that's what's next. So, and ultimately that's what we're in the game for, is to climb that mountain to see who's number one.
So, and that brings me to my next question, is that, you know, you're in a very stacked division. I mean, when I think about you guys, you're 13. Like to me, I'm like, you put on a performance as if you were top three, but you're 13. There's so many guys in this division. It's so stacked. Who do you want? Like, who would you like to fight to prove yourself in the division?
I mean, you know, I've always wanted to dance with Sean O'Malley, you know, but you know, he's worked his way up. And so I believe I have to do that next too. So, I mean, I already called out a couple of people, you know, Pedro Munoz was one, Dominic Cruz, Rob Font, you know, these guys are in front of me, but, you know, I am in a stacked division, and, I'm excited for what's next. You know, I've proven myself and I've earned where I'm at. So at this point, man, I'm just going to keep continuing to get better and, keep proving myself. And just having fun along the way.
Talking to Chris Gutierrez, newly ranked UFC bantamweight on MMA Today. I'm RJ, he's Dean. So at the press conference before the fight, John Anik was asked, like, hey, where do you think Frank Yeager stands, like, as far as, like, his legacy? And Anik said something interesting. He said, I thought for sure the standard for most popular American fighters ever was Chuck Liddell. Frank Yeager has passed that up as the most beloved American fighter. And I thought, huh, I can't immediately say, no, that's not true, but it made me really think about it. Like, how do you view Frankie Edgar's legacy, and is that part of it?
Well, of course. His legacy is nothing but extraordinary. You know, I always refer to him to, like, the little engine that could, you know. He was always the smaller guy in the division, and, you know, people would always, you know, go against him, and he would always come out on top, you know, to the point where he was the champ. And so that says a lot about him. It says that he's very persistent. You know, he's got heart. I mean, he's shown that time and time again. I think when you speak of Frankie Edgar, you speak of someone who's legendary in the sport, someone who's legitimately paved the way for fighters like myself and the fighters behind me. So I have nothing but respect for him, you know, and I wish him the best.
Yeah, I feel like that was universal. But also at that press conference, when you guys squared off, you said something to him, and I saw his eyes get, like, big. He looked, like, surprised. Was there something there? Because it seemed like you said something to him that, like kind of shocked him. There was, like, an extra fuel behind you.
No, we're good.
In this sport, and in combat sports in general, the young eat the old, right? Frankie Edgar was the legend, last fight. You're the next, you know, going from prospect to contender. You beat him. You, like, take his soul, right? Like, more or less. Do you like how that is in combat sports, or do you think the older guys should fight the older guys?
You know, it was definitely bittersweet. You know, if I sat here and said that I was 100% happy, I'd be lying. You know, it hurt me to do that to Frankie. You know, to like I said, the first thing that went through my mind when he hit the ground was, man, I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
You know, that was the number one thing. So it was definitely bittersweet. I wasn't able to celebrate the way I wanted. And I don't even want to say the way I wanted. I just think that's how I am as a person. You know, I celebrated, you know, I had a lot of things going into that fight and still dealing with a lot of shit afterwards. And so, you know, I think that's just me as a person. I didn't want to celebrate too much. I got the job done. You know, that was clear as day. It was seen. But, you know, there's things behind the scenes, you know, like you know, there's still stuff that goes on. But like I said, it was bittersweet because, you know, to see a legend go out like that is kind of, it hurts, you know?
Sure. What's some of the stuff that's going on that you're dealing with?
Just a lot of personal stuff. And then on top of that, you know, the stuff with coaches and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Typical fighter stuff, man.
Right.
Yeah, man.
It never ends, homie. It'll never end.
Yeah, you're right. It never does. But, you know, you would think when you're doing everything right, you know, you would think you get rewards, you know, whatever. It is what it is, you know, at this point.
Well, it's clearly not affecting you in the cage. Like I said, 7-0-1 in your last 8 in the UFC and a dazzling knockout over a legend of Frankie Edgar. So whatever you're doing, it's working in the cage. Who knows what's happening elsewhere. But has this run kind of allowed you to kind of look all the way to the top? Like, do you look at Aljamain Sterling now as the champion of the division and think, like, all right, this is how I'd fight him?
Yeah, you know, I've envisioned myself facing, you know, the champ, whoever the champ is at the time. And yeah, I think I bring a completely different set of skill sets. You know, I don't know. I truly approach the game a lot different. I think differently than a lot, you know. So I think the way I view martial arts as a whole is a little bit different. So I think that's what makes, I don't know. I hear a lot that I have a unique style or kind of, you know, awkward, and, you know, that's what I got.
Hold on. Now, you say you view it differently. What makes you different?
Just the way I don't know, the way I look at, like, patterns, the way I guess the best way I can explain it, then, you were a fighter. So, like, I view patterns different than you would view them. You know, if I make you, you know, if I draw a flinch out of you, you might see different something that I see. Right. But therefore, I view it a little bit different, therefore I approach the game a little different. You know what I mean? It's just like certain patterns that I see that someone would be like, no, I wouldn't do that. To me, I'm like, oh, there's my window of opportunity right there.
Yeah. And that's so, fair.
You know.
All right.
I want to talk about this stacked division that you're in. Is there anybody who do you think the like we know that Aljo has the belt, but I mean it's just so stacked and so deep. Who do you think is the best guy in the division?
Not named Chris Gutierrez.
Yeah, other than yourself.
Hit you with the hard one. Dean with the tough question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I think everyone's got their own set of skill sets that makes them dangerous. I think that's why, you know, the level the game is so unforgiving and so close all the time because, you know, you could I mean, a perfect fight. Adesanya was doing everything perfect. And
yeah,
one little that left hook from hell, apparently, you know. So I don't know. You know, I want to say myself, but you said I can't choose me. So who's the my other teammate that's not up there, Jonathan Martinez?
Yeah, he's a savage. That's what I'm talking about, man. Like, that's like what is he ranked like? 12 or 14. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
He's not.
Yeah.
He's not even ranked. No. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, he's an absolute savage, and like, he's not even ranked.
Yeah. 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 I think if I had to pick someone than myself, I would say, you know, Jonathan.
I think it's Merab Dvalishvili.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I said, he's tough too. He's got his own skill sets that he likes, you know.
And I'd be afraid to fight a guy who jumped into a frozen lake, split his head open, and then just like took care of it himself. Like that more than anything. Like more than knockout power, he's more crazy than submission skills, more than cardio. Like, oh, the guy split his skull open and just kept going like nothing happened. I'm scared of that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I guess you do gotta be a little crazy for all that, right? I wouldn't have been in the water in the first place.
Right? Freezing water? Like the people who do that blow my mind. It's like my shower's 200 degrees when I take it in the morning. If it's 150, I'm freezing.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I was saying my people, we're tropical people. We don't like
I feel you, brother. I'm a tropical people too.
There you go. Yeah, we don't like that. Okay, we stay close to the equator. It's warm.
I have no excuse. I'm English and I'm afraid of cold. Like my people grew up in the fog and rain and still I'm frozen all the time.
No,
I have no excuse.
I woke up to the snow. I'm in Colorado now and it's snowing, so gotta take out all the winter gear now.
Jesus.
No fun at all. So now that you're in Colorado, I mean, is this like vacation time for you? Like what's life like after, you know, in my opinion, the biggest win of your career? Like, is it back to business as usual or you're giving yourself some time to enjoy it?
No, I spent a couple of days out there in New York with the family. No, man, to be honest, I'm back dealing with all this legal bullshit. So
yeah,
it's, yeah, that's
life
my
don't
reality.
Wait for no one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you. Well, despite life happening, please, Chris, enjoy that win over Frankie Edgar as much as we did, right? No one wants to see a legend go out like that, but it was a brilliant night. It was an exclamation point on a night full of exclamation points, and I'm sure you'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. Dean will never forget it. Thank you for giving us that moment. Can't wait to see what you do next.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Don't get it twisted. I do enjoy the victory, but you know, the victory is done and over with.
Yeah.
On to the next. So.
See, that's winner mentality, Dean. That's why I was 4-3 in regional fights because I'd celebrate wins for like 6 months. And then Chris is like, no, I knocked out a legend back to work in 2 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a champ right there.
But it's got to do, right?
That's what you got to do. Yeah. I never learned that lesson. So I'm glad you did. Chris Gutierrez here on MMA Today. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
All right, my man. Be good.
Thank you. Appreciate the time, guys.
Busted Open is your daily home for all things pro wrestling. Join Dave LaGreca, WWE Hall of Famers Bully Ray and Mark Henry, and hardcore wrestling legend Tommy Dreamer.
Dave LaGreca here. From WWE to AEW, Impact, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and more, we talk it all. Whether you grew up watching Ric Flair or Stone Cold Steve Austin, Busted Open is your place for pro wrestling.
Busted Open, Mondays through Saturdays at 9 a.m. East on Fight Nation, Sirius XM Channel 156.
When I talk to Big John McCarthy, there's nothing like sipping my hot tea. Hold on, let me get. In South in South Florida where it's nice. I'm thinking go swimming. After I'm done with my show, I'm going to be in the pool. How's it going in Chicago, Big John? How's it going, buddy?
Same temperature here, man. I'm ready to go in the pool right now.
Do some ice skating. That's what you can do in Chicago. Christ. Big John McCarthy, color analyst for Bellator MMA. Why is he there? Because of Bellator 288 Nemkov versus Anderson 2. Let's dive right into it. Let's start with that main event. You know, it pays an MMA to have a short memory. Whatever happened last time, forget it. Move on. Next fight. Corey Anderson really having his way with Vadim Nemkov. Clash of heads. Ends up being a no contest. How much is it the fighter who's able to throw that away is more successful? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, in this one, I'm going to tell you, I think it works in one direction, but in the other direction, it doesn't. And he shouldn't just throw it away. I look at Vadim Nemkov has to take all that, throw it away. He has all the reasons. You know, he's going to say, I was overtrained. I took too long waiting for fights because it kept on being delayed. All these things that happened. There was the whole thing, you know, take a look at, you know, the Russia-Ukraine thing started there. He lives very close to the Ukrainian border. He's got a lot of friends there. He had a lot of issues going on. You say, hey, all that, put it to the side. This is a brand new fight. If you're Corey Anderson, I tell you what, I look and say, this is round four. We're just going into round four right now. Yeah, we had that clash of heads, but round four is coming on, and the same thing that was happening is going to happen in this round that was starting to happen in that second and third round of the first fight.
Tactically, Corey Anderson fought a great fight, which means at range, taking out the legs, sharp, crisp combinations. Do you think Vadim Nemkov has had the time and has had the coaching to get around the obstacles that seemed really insurmountable in the first fight?
Yeah, I think, you know, he actually, you know, has been training at ATT and he's been doing a lot of things because there's a difference, you know, and you know it, Jimmy. You can sit there and we talk about guys and we say, oh, you know, he's got great wrestling. Everyone's got different wrestling, and there is a definite difference between international style wrestling, which most Russians and Sambo guys get very used to and are comfortable with, and folk style or freestyle wrestling from the U.S. that is, it's got a different component. They do different things in a different manner with the same type of takedowns. They set them up differently. They finish them off differently. There's just a difference. And so Vadim was smart enough. He came out. He's been with ATT. He's been doing a lot of training with Johnny Eblen and guys out there. I've heard a lot of good things about what was going on. I had guys calling me saying, dude, you need to see these rounds that these guys are doing. So he's doing the right things. I think he needs to fight a different fight in the fact that I think Vadim's leg kicks are outstanding. But I think he hurt his foot in the first fight in one of those, and he stopped. And that's a big difference maker. He needs to get back to those. He needs to keep this at range because one thing that Corey Anderson is very good at that people don't give him credit for is his counter striking. His counter striking is outstanding. He does a good job of taking his head, bringing it a little bit off center, letting the thing slide by and hit you with a shot, making you pay, which just starts to slow you down and make you go, I don't want to do that again. I got hit. And he starts to take over.
It's called the hot hand fallacy in statistics, right? Where if you flip a coin three times and it comes up heads every time, I think the fourth one's going to be heads. Well, it resets every single time. And mathematically, it doesn't make any difference. But momentum in MMA is a real thing. You're on fire. Things are going great. And that carries you into the next fight. Both of these guys had a ton of momentum. Nemkov hadn't lost since 2016. That was the last loss of his career. Corey Anderson, a new life in Bellator, had three straight wins going into that fight after losing to Jan Blachowicz in the UFC. Who do you think has a better sense of that momentum right now that feels that what they did is carrying them forward into this fight?
No matter what anyone says, it has to be Corey Anderson. You have to take a look, and Corey Anderson, in his mind, can say, I have been in the cage with you. I know what I felt. I know what I looked at. I know how you responded, and I believe that I know how to push you over that cliff. I think that Corey looks at his, you know, like Corey's conditioning is just unbelievable, and there's certain guys that can just push at that level that you just, you know, you and I start to, you know, we'll match it, but we can only match it for a certain amount of time where we start to fall off the cliff and we can't match anymore. And Corey knows that. It's not that he doesn't get tired. It's that he recovers faster than we do. And he's used that throughout his career. And I think Corey looks at it like, I've already seen how, if I can push you, I can push you over that edge. I can make you work harder than you need to. I have nothing but confidence going into this fight based upon what I've already seen in the past.
Moving on, speaking, of course, to big John McCarthy, color analyst for Bellator. When I look at the card, obviously, a name that pops out to everybody and every fight fan, Usman Nurmagomedov taking on Patricio Pitbull. Of course, Patricio Pitbull, his brother. Patricio hits like you stole something from him. The power in that right hand, has a very good left hook as well. That's been the key to his success. Nurmagomedov, so great at getting inside and nullifying the offense of his opponent. What style right now, to you, has the advantage?
You know, everyone looks at Usman, and they, because of that last name, they basically put him, oh, he is a Dagestani wrestler. He's a guy that takes people down. He's just like Khabib. He's going to take you down, and he's going to maul you. That's not the kind of style he has. That is not the fighter that he has. He is a guy that he loves to be in the stand-up. He loves to be at range. He's got beautiful kicks. His hands are good. He hits and he moves well, but he's also got the wrestling. And one of the things going into this, look, the guy he was training with for the last, you know, let's say 4 months was Islam Makhachev. They were in Abu Dhabi training together. One was training for his lightweight championship fight in the UFC. One was training for his lightweight championship in Bellator. You know, Usman is a complete fighter. If he's going to the wrestling, he's doing it for specific reasons or to keep himself safe. He wants to be in the stand-up. You know Patricio as well as anybody, Jimmy, and you've seen what he can do. And when he believes in himself, when he has confidence in a fight, he can be deadly to anyone. And the one thing that is, it's the catch-all in this is one of them has that one punch knockout power. That is Patricio. Patricio can put your lights out with both hands, right hand, left hand, where Usman is more of a volume guy. He starts to put these shots on you and then brings in the knee, the kicks. He catches you where you're three steps behind. You know, this is a fight where either guy can win. Obviously, Usman is the guy, 15-0, his brother, you know, being Umar, 15-0. You got Khabib, 29-0. Like, you got to look and say, there's something that's been made there that's really done well, but you cannot take anything away from the Pitbull brothers either, because their record throughout their stay in Bellator before, they're just outstanding. And being the champion, Patricio being the underdog in this, he feels like he has a lot to prove. And he says, look, I've done all the work necessary. Just stand by. Watch what's going to happen. So we'll see.
It's very rare and it's very weird. I'm speaking to Big John McCarthy, color analyst in Bellator. And, man, I called a ton of fights for Patricio Pitbull and Patricio. I called a ton, you know, their entire run in Bellator until handing it off to you. The idea that the older brother, the bigger guy who's in a more marquee weight class generally, I think 145 is tougher in Bellator than 155, he's almost lived in the shadow of his little brother, as weird as that might sound. But that idea that when you talk about the toughness and the mentality, no one's stronger than Patricio. I've never seen Patricio break ever, despite getting his ass kicked in fights, despite
having
losing
a broken leg.
Doesn't, dude, the guy just doesn't care. Patricio has had those up and down moments where, as you said, when he pulls the trigger, there's nobody better. When he hesitates, he's a little bit lost. What do you think are going to be the things in between rounds that keep him in this fight? Because that's really been his weakness. He doesn't have the consistency of Patricio. What do you think gives it to him in this fight?
I think the thing that he has to do is he has to establish, and it doesn't have to be that he has to make it happen, but he has to establish with Usman a respect factor of, I will hit you with shots and I will take you down. I will make this not a stand-up battle, but a battle that is an MMA battle. I'm going to take and make this to where you don't know exactly where I want to go with the fight at this time, because that will help set up and slow down the stand-up game of Usman. When Usman is not sure about if he's going to get taken down, he doesn't want to be on his back. He's great in the top position. Off of his back, it's a different thing. Patricio needs to establish, hey, I'm going to confuse you. I'm going to use all this experience that I've gained over the years, and I'm going to hit you with heavy shots that make you doubt that you want to come back, and then I'm going to do things that put you in positions that you are not sure of what I'm doing next, and now you're going to be just slowing down your offense based upon you're not sure what's going to be coming.
Another fight and fighter I definitely want to talk about. This is a guy I called his fights in M1. This is like 2008, I think I called his first fight. Daniel Weichel, 42 wins, 13 losses. When you talk about comebacks, one of the greatest I've ever seen was Bellator 138 when he took on Patricio, had Patricio Pitbull done against the fence. It was over. It was over at the end of round one. Patricio was able to survive to the bell. Round two started off the same. It was over, and Patricio hit him from the fifth row with a left hook that would flatten a rhinoceros. And Daniel Vaischel, since then, had a win streak of four, but, you know, kind of win some, lose some. He's 37 years old. It's like dog years, folks. Fight years are like dog years. Is this a test against undefeated Tamir Kadyrov if there's still, sharpness left on the blade? Is that the test for you?
Yeah, you know, I look at this just like you do. You're talking about 56. This will be his 56th professional fight stepping into that cage. That's a ton, Jimmy. You know. But he has not accepted a ton of damage over those times. You haven't seen guys other than Patricio knock him out. And so he still is very, very good at the way he technically just picks a fight apart. I go to his fight with Sal Rogers, a guy who you look at physically super strong, fast. He's got all these elements. And Daniel took those elements away from him and took away his confidence in the fight. Well, he needs to do the same thing here with Tamir. You know, his Kadyrov is just a stud, man. This guy, he's different than a lot of the Dagestani style fighters in that this guy will be in the stand-up. He'll do a lot of spinning attacks. He's more like the Zabit than the Habib. He's a different style, but he will go to that grappling and he will lace the legs and he will beat the snot out of you on the ground. So Daniel has got to put it in early that I'm not an easy guy to take down. You're going to have to work your butt off and I'm going to make you work. And when you fail, I'm going to put the offense on you. So all of a sudden you start to doubt, because right now there is no doubt in Tamir. Tamir believes in himself, 11-0. No one has beaten me. You know, there's all these stories about all these fights that he's had. You know, he's had combat sambo, but he's also had all these street fights that all the Dagestanis talk about. They're all talking about all of his street fights. Oh, you should have seen this street fight. And they go through these stories and it's like, what the hell are you doing street fighting? You're supposed to make money doing this, but you know, they believe in him, and he definitely has the confidence of a winner.
Speaking of confidence, of course, speaking to Big John McCarthy, color analyst for Bellator, Tyrell Fortune was part of this original, like, Fab Five, guys like Ed Ruth coming in with a lot of wrestling talent. It was, you know, guys who didn't have a lot of MMA experience getting thrown into the deep end of the pool in Bellator. Let's see if you can swim. Joey Davis, part of this. When I look at Tyrell Fortune, a couple of tough losses. I was here in South Florida when he lost to Linton Bissell, very experienced heavyweight, had a setback against Tim Johnson. Is it a matter of that physical talent, the ability we always knew he had, combined with some experience, could get him to the next level? Is this the fight that takes him there?
This could be the fight that takes him there. It's really, you know, the difference when we have guys that they can wrestle. And they can stand up and use their hands. But the transitioning between the two just doesn't click. It just doesn't happen. And there's that space in between that they always get caught in. And that really has been Tyrell Fortune. If you're looking at it, look, his hands have gotten good. And his stand-up is smooth when he's deciding, I'm going to be the stand-up guy. His wrestling is outstanding. But he's got to be able to transition from one element to the next to be that next step, next level fighter. And he's going to have to prove it again. Dude, Daniel James is a monster. Yeah. We're talking, dude, I stood next to him. I go, dude, call me small John McCarthy, because he is a big man. You know, he's going to come into the cage about 280 pounds. He cuts to 265 to make the weight. He's had a lot of experience going, you know, and this is the one thing, you know, he's finally fighting here in Chicago, which is his hometown. But he's been, you know, going to places like Russia, you know, St. Petersburg and Moscow. You know, he's been to all these places with ACA, and he had a great record there. I watched every one of his fights. You know, I remember when, because you called one of his fights back at Bellator 112 early on. And I look at him now. This is a guy, he's been training a lot with Curtis Blaydes. That's his guy. Wrestling-wise, he's, you know, taken a lot from Curtis. And he does a great job of being an anti-wrestler, a guy that defends against it, but comes out and likes to be in the top position. And man, he very much reminds me of Derek Lewis when he gets to that top position. So this is a great fight. Tyrell Fortune has the pedigree. He's the guy, if you're looking at it, you say, that's the guy that should win this fight. But I could easily see Daniel James doing some damage and putting him away.
there are certain things, there's certain like red flags, I got to say, as a commentator or as an analyst, whatever the hell you want to call me. When you see somebody, I'm serious, an American that wins an ACA, that's a big deal. Because they're not brought out there to win. They're not brought out there to win. Right. So anytime an American can win, by the way, people don't know ACA, it's in Dagestan, it's in Eastern Europe, it's in Russia. Americans are brought out there to lose to Eastern Europeans. Any American that walks out of there with a 500 record, I'm like, dude, you must be really good. Because those judges the referees are not looking out for you, buddy. You know what I'm saying?
You say it so – and this guy went in there, and I'm telling you, Jimmy, he won every fight. He lost, they decision loss in
took
his
it away
fight.
From – yes, yes.
Every other one he finished, he was their number one guy, and they wouldn't give him the championship fight. So you're going, yeah, he's pretty tough.
Yeah, it's a tough place. Now, while I got you here, Big John, I want to ask you, of course, with the finish, Mark Goddard, outstanding referee, with the finish with Israel Adesanya, and what I'm curious about in that fight with Alex Pereira, and I want to ask you about this, do you as a referee take into account things like title fight? The guy won four, maybe three out of the last four rounds. He's got to be ahead. There are 3 minutes left. Are any of those things, you know, he's been rocked in other fights that I've called. He's come back before. How much is a referee supposed to keep in their mind outside of these two guys and what I think about this guy right now? How much is a referee supposed to keep in their mind? Because you always hear like, oh, this guy knows I always get dropped. This guy knows I do. I'm like, well, how much is a referee supposed to be thinking about those things in the moment? You, as one of the best referees in the business, how much of the backlog of information about a fighter, where are we in the round, how have the other rounds gone, how much should you keep that in your mind considering a stoppage?
Everything. All of it. Always. I the one thing I hate to hear is when I hear a referee go, oh, I referee every fight the same. Bullshit. You're not a good referee then. There is a difference, and there's a difference between a guy that's a prelim fighter coming in and accepting damage and you stopping the fight to save them from that damage than there is when you're talking about a guy that has – a guy like Israel Adesanya in that fight, both of them, both Alex and Israel, they – This isn't just a matched fight, Jimmy. It is, they've earned the right to be in that position. They've earned the right to be the main event in Madison Square Garden on a big fight card that's a pay-per-view because of their skill set and everything they've proven. You want to give them as much as you can. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't stop the fight when you see that they can no longer protect themselves. If they swim into deep waters and they're starting to drown, it's your job to get them out. And I think that's what Mark Goddard looked at. And here's the difference of what you're looking at. When you have a fight, and you of all people know that what's the one thing that you want to see when you have a guy that is coming at you, your eyes have to be where? They have to be on that opponent, because there's only one way you see the next shot coming. And that is when you are keeping your eyes, no matter where they are, your head movement, the eyes are always tracking and on target with that person. Well, at the end, when you see Mark Goddard coming in and stopping that, people can say what they want. Israel can say what he wants. I know he said that he was still lucid, and he feels like he is, but his eyes were looking down at the canvas. His head went down, and his arms are down in that position where he's looking straight down, and there's a lot of time left in that round, and you've got a guy that is a big-time striker who is putting shots, and there was probably 14, 15, 16 unanswered blows at that point when Goddard came in and stopped that. Now, I'm not saying that he couldn't have let it go a little bit longer. Possibly he could have, because everyone wants to see and be able to say that was definitive, no doubt. I've had those fights, John Jones against Daniel Cormier. I let him go to the very end. I let it be where that last shot that John Jones, it put Daniel out and I stopped the fight. And there's people that look and say, that was perfect. And there's, you know, Cain Velasquez, he was so freaking mad at me over that. He says, John, you let him take too much. Now, in the back, Daniel Cormier is telling me what? John, don't ever stop the fight. John, I'm going to be fine. John, you know, you want it to be definitive so no one can sit there in that big of a fight and say, well, I think he could have still gone on. But there comes that point where it is your responsibility when you see a guy that is now looking straight down, instead of looking at his opponent, is he intelligently defending himself at that point? You got to say no, and I understand the stoppage.
Big John, it is always a pleasure, my man. Bellator 288, Nemkov versus Anderson 2 on Showtime. That's right, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thank you so much for giving us your time, brother.
Jimmy, thank you for having me on, man. You're the best, brother.
MMA on SiriusXM is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Plus, catch Unlocking the Cage weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern and MMA Today Tuesday to Thursday from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156 and on the SXM app.
SiriusXM Podcasts.